Professor Alan Dershowitz, lawyer, jurist, author, former Harvard Law professor, but I always going to call him Professor, and he joins us now. Professor, great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm on Martha's Vineyard. What could be better?
Oh, with all the poor people.
Surrounded by liberal Democrats.
Oh, no, no, no. Let me guess.
None of whom are talking to me these days.
Oh, yeah. Suddenly you're persona non grata. You were at all the fancy cocktail parties 10 years ago, Alan. But now it's...
Last month. everybody thinks I'm supporting Trump, even though I voted enthusiastically for Hillary Clinton.
So
I'm a liberal Democrat.
Yep.
I haven't changed anything. Yep. I've been making the same arguments now for 50 years. When Nixon was being impeached, I got the ACLU to defend his right not to be named as an unindicted co-conspirator. When Tom DeLay was indicted, when Rick Perry was indicted, when Bob Menendez was indicted, I've come out always against the criminalization of political differences, no matter who the target of the criminalization is. I've done the same thing with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. It's just wrong to start accusing people of vague, vague crimes. Now they're doing it to Bernie Sanders and his wife. They're saying that they engaged in bank fraud using broad, broad definitions of fraudulent intent or corrupt intent. You know, it distorts the criminal justice system when we just decide we don't like somebody, we don't like his politics or her politics. Let's go after them. Let's stretch an existing law and try to cover them. It reminds me of what Lavrenti Beria, the head of the KGB, said to Stalin, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. That's just not the way our criminal justice system should operate, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, a liberal, or a conservative.
Well, you would say that it's not that every politician ever accused of anything is wrongly accused.
There are crooked politicians. Mm-hmm. But what I'm concerned about is when you get these vague laws like obstruction of justice or fraud, and you stretch them beyond their original intent. Take, for example, the attack on President Trump. My friend Jeffrey Toobin, who is my student, and I like him very much, says that firing Comey after saying, I hope you'll drop the investigation of Flynn, can be obstruction of justice. Well, it can't be. Those are both constitutionally protected acts done by the president. The president could have gone over to Comey and said, look, I demand, I instruct you, I direct you to drop the investigation of Flynn, and I direct you to start an investigation of Laura Ingraham and Alan Dershowitz. That's the authority of the president. It's a unitary executive branch, and the president's in charge of the FBI. He's in charge of the Justice Department. The president's problem is he probably didn't understand that, and he did it indirectly. I hope he'll drop the investigation. Spoke to other people. He could have just told him to do it, or he could have just pardoned Flynn. And that would have ended the investigation. The president has enormous power under the Constitution. Congress can restrict the power, as they did by appointing, you know, special prosecutors, but that statute has lapsed. There no longer is a special counsel statute enacted by Congress that restricts the power of the president. Congress could also pass a statute saying the president shall appoint the director of the FBI for 10 years and does not have the authority to fire him except for good cause. They didn't do that. Congress allows the president to fire the director of the FBI for any reason whatsoever, and Comey knows that. He said it. He testified to that.
We're talking to Alan Dershowitz here on the Laura Ingraham Show. The question of the constitutionality of the special counsel has been raised by Trump's team. I think Cassowitz and company are going to pursue that. You know, we go back to Morrison v. Olson with the independent counsel statute all those years ago. Was it 1986? I can't remember what year it was. 1980s. I don't know what year that was. But where are you on that? Just the delegation of this authority to an individual who, I mean, by most standards, is really not accountable to many people. I mean, I guess the president can fire him, but other than that, I don't think he's really.
No, the president can't fire him. No, under the regulations of the Justice Department, at least, and those probably are not binding on the president. But under the regulations, only the attorney general or the deputy attorney general can fire him. So what the president could do is order Rosenstein to fire him. And if he doesn't, he could fire Rosenstein. That would be politically devastating to the president. It would be so reminiscent of the Saturday Night Massacre that got Nixon in so much trouble. So I think it's a difficulty. I think what's wrong with the special counsel appointment is jurisdiction is too broad. They have given him authority to investigate, quote, the Russian matter. Well, Gretchen Matter is not a crime. Again, to take it to its extreme, let's assume Donald Trump called up Vladimir Putin and said, "Hey, Putin, I got a deal for you. If you help me get elected president lawfully, legitimately, by leaking things you already have, not engaging in any unlawful conduct, tell you what, I'll eliminate the sanctions." That would be a terrible thing to do, but it wouldn't be criminal. There's nothing on the criminal statute books that would prohibit that any more than it prohibited Ronald Reagan's people from calling the Ayatollah Khomeini and saying, "Look, you know, these hostages, it would be better if I got credit for releasing them than if Carter got credit. So why don't we release them on the first day of my term?" Those are not criminal acts. You know, Congress maybe should consider making some of them criminal. Obviously, the Russians shouldn't be allowed to interfere in our election, but there's nothing criminal about it right now. And giving the special counsel this broad authority, which Congress should have, Congress should be looking at ways of making new laws prospectively, but you don't use a prosecutor to fill the gaps in existing law. That's just undemocratic.
I was thinking about the Jeff Sessions decision to hire Rosenstein, and just as this is more of a political question, but Rosenstein, you know, he obviously worked as a career guy. He was in Chris Christie's class of prosecutors, so it was another friend of mine was a prosecutor, the U.S. attorney with him. And looking back on that, just as an interesting political conversation, I mean, I think that was a mistake for Sessions to select. First of all, Sessions decides to recuse him. Did he really have to recuse himself?
Oh, I don't think so. I think
it's a huge mistake.
Rosenstein has a much, much more compelling case for a recusal right now because he's a potential witness. If they're looking into the president's firing of Comey, who's the first witness you call if you're the president? You call the guy who wrote you the memo saying, fire him. So how can Rosenstein both be a prosecutor and a witness at the same time? That's a more compelling case for recusal than what Sessions did.
Yeah, I have to say that Trump can, you know, President Trump can, you know, lose his cool about things, you know, like he was clearly annoyed at Sessions for recusing himself, but I think he was right about it. He has good instincts. His instincts on that kind of stuff is like, why the heck are you recusing yourself? You didn't do anything. And so
well,
I think he's,
you know,
he's not happy there.
I don't want to get political about it, but this is a president who rules by instinct.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. He makes decisions very quickly and very certainly, and you know, there's positives, there's negatives. I'm actually writing a book about the investigation and the Trump presidency, quote, Trumping justice, and it will be all about these issues. It's an ebook. It'll be out in the summer sometime.
Oh, great. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Can we move on? Well, one more question that I want to ask you about the
sure.
courts about to hand down their final decisions. But on this issue of Russian investigations and so forth, do you think if Hillary had won, that the Democrats would have still been pressing this? I mean, and you're a Democrat, liberal Democrat.
I don't think so, but I think the Republicans would have been doing a lot of things, including probably investigating Hillary Clinton. You know, both parties neither party is immune from this disease. They both think that the first recourse is lock them up. And remember, it was the Republicans who were yelling about Hillary Clinton, lock them up. Now some of them are saying that about Bernie Sanders and his wife Jane, and Democrats did it with people on the other side. I think we have to call a kind of moratorium on using the criminal law on either side. You don't like somebody, go after them politically, organize against them, spend money against them, write op-eds against them, do all of those things. But don't try to turn their political actions into crimes unless they are clear crimes. Obviously, you get Congressman Jefferson takes money, puts it in his freezer. They have it there. It seems to be, you know, cold cash. That was a plausible case for prosecution. But most of the other cases, the senator from Alaska, those turned out to be not particularly compelling criminal cases. And we just do this too easily. Benjamin Netanyahu, they're going after him because he took cigars and champagne from a close friend. I mean, these things are just absurd. People don't trust democracy. They say just because somebody got elected, we have better ways of getting them. You know, my liberal friends say to me, all right, if you can't get Trump criminally, what else do you propose? How else do you get him? I say, vote against him. next time. That's what democracy is. He has a four-year term. Face it, he's going to serve out his four-year term. It's not the issue of how we get him. The issue is, in a democracy, a person serves his term. If we don't like him, we don't elect him next time.
So, Alan, I have a question. If you go, if you happen to amble into the Chilmark General Store on Martha's Vineyard in any
I'll
given...
I'll be there. I'll be there today at noon. I go there every day for lunch. I sit on the porch. I tell jokes. I defend my actions. It's great fun.
You know, so let's say you amble in. Now, you're sitting on the porch here at the Chilmark General Store. Now, what do you, can I want to, I want to have a picture this, like a day in the life of Alan Dershowitz. So you're out there on the porch.
Sure.
Do you have a soda pop? Do you, what type of sandwich? Is it vegan?
About
is it
one? No, I'm not one of those guys. About one day a week, I have a slice of pizza. I wish I could have it 7 days a week, but I limit myself to one day. I have one particular great. I love pizza. Other than that, I usually have a salad. I have a cup of coffee. We schmooze. I have about 10 guys and about 4 women who come regularly to the porch. Sometimes Larry David pops over.
Oh, boy. He's
Ted
having
Danson
a conniption.
Pops over. You know, these are, but I'll tell you, there's one Republican that I've met all the years I've been there. There's one guy, a Republican, a friend of Geraldo Rivera, who comes to the porch from time to time, and I have to defend him because it's a very liberal place. If you want to meet Republicans, hey, there's a whole other island. It's called Nantucket.
Yeah, they
are. But Martha's Vineyard, a mostly liberal Democrat.
Yeah, no, I used to go there. You know, I was a poor kid growing up, so I went and, like, biked
Me
around
too.
There.
Me
yeah,
too.
I just biked around there.
Yeah.
And I go to Martha's Vineyard every now and then, but it is a beautiful place. I think it's a much more beautiful island than Nantucket, which is flat. Martha's Vineyard is very hilly. And it's
I'm on top of a hill. I'm looking at the Atlantic Ocean right now. It's beautiful. I have my family up here. It's really nice.
Well, and you can forget about all this other stuff until I call you up. So, Alan, what's your gut on the travel ban? Will the court uphold the travel ban?
I think there are two alternatives. Either the court won't take the case because it's only a temporary travel ban, and they'll wait for something more permanent. If they take the case, they'll uphold most of it. They'll uphold it as it applies to people who have never been in the United States, to people who are strangers. Look, a guy in Saudi Arabia says, you know, I'd like to come see the Statue of Liberty. He has no rights as under the American Constitution to come here. And so I think the court will uphold it. And remember that the seven countries that were listed in the ban were all picked by the Obama administration. So obviously, you know, it was Willie Sutton once said, they asked him, why you rob banks? That's where the money is. Why do you pick countries? That's where the terrorists are. And that's the countries that don't have appropriate vetting. So I think a reasonable Supreme Court would uphold this statute, particularly its second version. The first one was a little more difficult because it included people with green cards.
Yeah, that was a bit of a mistake.
Right.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could probably do that as well, but it just didn't. You probably
it's
could do that under the Constitution.
Yeah.
But I don't
it
know.
Would be harder. I think it would be a much closer vote. I think this will be a 6-2 or a 7-3, a 7-2 vote, or a 6-3 vote upholding it is my prediction.
Do you think Ruth Bader Ginsburg should recuse herself from any case involving the president, given her political comments?
I think any case involving the president himself, that is, if there were a case involving whether he could be subpoenaed, she would have to recuse herself because of what she said. But any case involving just a presidential order, no, that's a little too distant. And there's precedent. Remember, Justice Scalia had some pretty strong words also at some point. I mean, I've known Justice Scalia was a friend of mine. He never held back his views about people. I liked him very much.
He liked
his
you a
father
lot.
Was a teacher.
Yeah.
His father was a teacher at Brooklyn College when I was a student there. And so that's how far back we go.
Oh, my gosh. I did not know. I mean, I was a family friend of theirs for almost 30 years now. But that's amazing.
Eugene Scalia was the chairman of the Department of Romance Languages.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was the president of the student body. And I had some run-ins with him because he was very conservative. He was trying to fire a professor named Slockhauer, who had refused to answer questions based on his Fifth Amendment in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee. And me, the young liberal, I was defending Slockhauer, and I loved Eugene Scalia. He was the nicest man, great sense of humor, real dignity.
That's so awesome. What a great story. We could talk to you forever. Say hi to Larry David. Actually, tell Larry David, Skip Bronson is my dear friend. Tell him that, Alan. He will know what that means. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.